some point we couldn't get a beer beyond midnight unless we crossed the county line. And I remember getting into a taxi and I was ankle deep in peanut shells and a guy looked like he played in ZZ Top driving us to some bar where they had a sort of one of those passport photo machines in the bar. And so we all crammed in there, the sort of team of engineers, producers, commentators. I've got this brilliant photo of us all crammed together. It was just an incredible day of work. And, you know, it was unforgettable.
And 12 years ago this week. And Alistair, Bruce, Paul, thank you very much. Looking forward to the Ipswich Villa game today. Enjoy it. And yeah, cheers for that. What a way to end the show. Thank you. Cheers. Thank you. What a reason to be 30 seconds late. That story. That's the way I see it. Steve Crossman. But let me just say Adrian and Redding, Aidan and Devon, Charlie Mullen, Steve Rush. Well done. You got the last of our conundrums. Beanstown.
Wow.
Was indeed the footballer.
Wow.
Ben, hold on. Was the footballer Ben Watson, shares the surname with Tom and Bubba. However, being the Democrat that I am, I also have three conundrums just for you guys,
well,
if you would like
you.
Them, if you're not going to throw the baby out with the bathwater here.
Oh, that's long gone. It's long gone. The bath is empty and has been for at least 7 days. But we'll take three. In fact, I think right. three is more manageable, given Julianne Laurent is here, who never gets any.
What? And I got more than you.
And Nader Manure is here, who always gets the ball. We'll be fine.
Yeah. That used to be the case. I feel like we're talking about the United in the 90s here. You know? Because I actually think you've done really well. I don't think you get the credit for how much improved you are now. Because he's right. You used to, Julianne, I'm talking about you.
You used to be terrible
at these.
Yeah.
But you're getting much better.
The ego's already sizable. Right, what have we got?
Right, so as I said earlier, right, and I'm going to make it a bit more tricky for you guys to think on a weekly basis. Three conundrums where the footballer is the conundrum, but they share a second name with a great golfer. Okay. Mm-hmm. And what's great, I think if you win a Masters, you're great, right? You look at these three names of the golfers, and I wouldn't need to explain to you who they are. Put it that way.
Okay.
So, going to give you a couple of clues. None of them are based on a British golfer, right? So none of the namesakes are British golfers. And only one of the footballers, which is the actual conundrum, is British.
Okay.
There you go. Right.
Jules, you're in.
Here we go. First one. Oh, did I also say that I've arranged them in the order of the birth date of the golfer from your oldest to youngest?
Got it.
Yeah, exactly. Which is just another layer of intrigue.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this is the five lie this morning through breakfast, through us into you could be what they put in the package to win awards this year.
Wow. Okay.
I mean, the fishing chat earlier in breakfast was so good. Our show, our time machine and our football songbook was excellent. And I know you're going to carry that on today.
Absolutely.
Because this is a great start. This is your show, technically. Right. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Conundrum.
Yes. Insider win. InsiderWin. Next one. Surgical AI is an artificial intelligence. Surgical AI. And your third one, chamomile hats. Now, obviously, Steve Crossman knows how to spell chamomile, but for everybody else, chamomile. So two M's for mother in there, chamomile. But it's if you said it, is it written to be chamomile, of course, so you got the H in there as well. Chamomile. Footballers who share surnames with great golfers. And that's why ties everything together today, because we just had our time machine with ABB. Now, did anyone get one straight away? Bang?
Nope.
No, I think I've got this. I might have the surname of the second one. Is it Luis Garcia?
Luis Garcia. He drinks sangria.
Wow.
He came from Barca. You're absolutely right. The Garcia, Luis Garcia, and of course the golfer, Sergio Garcia.
Yeah.
Brilliant work. Brilliant.
Wow. So if it's in order of oldest to youngest, that means there is one younger than him. Is it younger in age or more recent Masters winner?
The first one was born in 1945.
Ah, yes, remember it well.
to make you feel old, Sergio Garcia was born in 1980. He's 3 years younger than me.
Mm.
It's crazy. Okay. The other one's a young'un.
Yeah, I'm going to say, I feel like I want to do the younger one. I think is the one that I'm going to have a shot at.
Chamomile hats.
Anything, guys, anything.
Nothing.
I could give you a clue in which you'd all shout the answer straight away if you want to do that. And then you can leave
too
the...
too much.
Okay.
Anything coming from the guys? I don't think... I feel like two, with me having got one right and no one having else got one right, is actually the perfect number.
Yeah. Put it out. I disagree. I think I'm going to give you the clue. Are you ready?
All right, then, fine.
Yeah. Once you work out the surname of this footballer, I think in terms of which one of you gets the answer first, it's up for grabs.
Oh, it's all up
Justin
for grabs
Thomas.
Now.
Justin Thomas is the golfer.
So Michael Thomas. Sorry,
Michael
I got it wrong.
Thomas, yeah.
It's all up for grabs Absolutely. Now. It's Justin Thomas. Nice. All right, good work. Oh, Nadim, the only one not to get one.
Why are you saying that, Crossy?
Because I'm surprised because he's so good.
I can't do it every week, can I?
Okay. No.
You're only good as your last.
So we're leaving Insider Win for 850-58 and at 5 Live Sport. Insider Win. Yeah. And you said they are specifically Masters winners, didn't you?
I said they've all won a majors.
Oh, okay.
So in this case, probably the golfer doesn't get mentioned enough in terms of that early golden, black and white era of golf, but actually won 3 US Open titles, absolute legend. The footballer, I would say, is probably more commonly known than the golfer. Insider Win, the footballer's, great. Well, even I can say that.
Well, thank you for
despite
keeping
the club
us involved.
Team, I support. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Oh, right. Okay, that is a clue. Thank you, Colin, for keeping us involved in the feature. I was afraid we were going to be dropped, and I appreciate your loyalty.
Never, ever.
Oh, Dennis Irwin.
Yeah, I was going to say, I had it. I swear
you had it.
I swear you had it.
You had it.
I thought Dennis
had it after me. You had it after me. Okay, that's cool.
No, I thought Dennis had two N's in this country.
No, that's cool. We always remember who finishes second.
It's one each. I had my one.
One.
Well, after that, you can basically message us on 85058 and at 5 laptop, whatever you want, because we've done the quiz. Colin, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Colin Murray, back from 10 o'clock next Sunday. 5 Live Premier League Sunday is on the way. I'll tell you all about it after the news on 5 Live with Giuliano Cassidy.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
The Israeli army says it's killed another top Hezbollah official in strikes carried out in Lebanon yesterday. The Iranian-backed group has yet to confirm the killing of Nabil Kaouk. Israel has continued to bombard targets in Lebanon after killing Hezbollah's leader, Hassan Nasrallah. Here's the Lebanese Prime Minister, Najib Mikati.
We are in a situation, it's not an easy one. We are collaborating with each other. So that we can pass this situation diplomatically on the day-to-day situation. We are following this matter, and I hope that things will end.
An 8-year-old boy has died in Cumbria following an accident involving a gun. It happened at a farm in the Walkop area. Fiona Trott has more.
Cumbria police say officers and paramedics were called to the farm yesterday afternoon following reports that a child had been seriously injured by a firearm. A gun was found at the scene and an 8-year-old boy was taken to hospital by air ambulance with serious injuries to his head and face. He died overnight. A man in his 60s was arrested at the scene on suspicion of causing grievous bodily harm. He's now being questioned on suspicion of gross negligence manslaughter.
The Cabinet Office Minister, Pat McFadden, has defended Keir Starmer after a Labour MP quit. Rosie Duffield has criticised the Prime Minister for accepting gifts from a party donor. Mr McFadden said he's disappointed by a decision, but says she's also been disillusioned with the party for a long time. The Conservative Party conference is opening in Birmingham. All 4 leadership candidates will be trying to win support before MPs eliminate 2 more of them. One of the candidates, Kemi Badenoch, has defended comments she's made, claiming that not all cultures are valid.
I actually think it's extraordinary that people think that's an unusual or controversial thing to say. Of course, not all cultures are equally valid. I don't believe in cultural relativism. I believe in Western values, the principles which have made this country great. And I think that we need to make sure that we continue to abide by those principles to keep the society that we have now.
And Oasis are due to reveal more details tomorrow after a cryptic message appeared on social media. The band posted photos of billboards featuring Noel and Liam with the headline, "Be careful what you wish for."
The Football Daily Podcast on BBC Sounds.
I'm Joel Hart and I'm here at Liverpool's training ground interviewing the great Alison Becker.
I have three kids. They like to be on the goal when they play with me.
Do you see talent?
Yeah, I can see a little bit, but I would love to have a striker in the family.
Alison is up from the back and he comes. Oh, would you believe it?
In this club, I think we have this prophetic sentence, "You never walk alone." It's always a reminder for me that people are on my side.
On the Football Daily Podcast, you can hear the full interview as we talk all things goalkeeping and what it takes to be the number one at one of the world's biggest clubs.
Listen on BBC Sounds. This is Five Live Sports.
Five Live Premier League Sunday.
With Steve Crossman.
Listen on BBC Sounds.
Afternoon, we've got Manchester United against Tottenham in full at 4:30. There's the deciding ODI between England and Australia on Five Sports Extra. Action in the WSL and Rugby Union's Premiership. Our football commentary start at 2 with Ipswich Town against Aston Villa. Fozzy hits it! Oh, what a goal! What a strike from the captain!
Gerrard shoots from a mile out.
Erik ten Hag's under more scrutiny. Ange Postecoglou thinks that's just manager roulette.
There's always some manager under pressure. I think it's just one of those spinning boards with all their faces on it, and wherever it lands on, he's the one that cops it for a week or two. So he keeps mentioning he's won two trophies, and he has, mate. You know, so I don't think that's insignificant.
Ten Hag says be patient again.
We are working and we are in progress. We made the choice to sign very young players, like last year, Haaland, like this year, the Sinisalo, the Lenny Yoro, and we have to build them.
And in Bristol, England and Australia play winner takes all.
Hardy into Salt, who drives down the ground, over mid on, and oh, into the advertising sponge. That's going to be six.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Five Lives Premier League Sunday. I feel like we should start straight away at the cricket, though, because it's that massive, decisive ODI between England and Australia, and Nick Eshragani is watching.
It is, yes, and Australia winning the toss here, sticking England into bat in gloomy and grey conditions. The weather forecast does look a bit dodgy later on as well. England were off to a flyer through Phil Salt, who made 45 from 27, but he was one of two Aaron Hardy victims. Hardy also dismissing Will Jacks for a four-ball duck. After that, England's scoring rate slowed just a touch, but this partnership between Ben Duckett and Harry Brook building nicely now. It's 32 from 38 balls. England 102 for 2 from 15 overs. We're not quite sure if we'll get the full 50 overs in, but at this stage, England set fair. 102 for 2 after 15.
Live commentary right now on Five Sports Extra, so we'll keep you up to date, but then we'll have a proper chat about it as well before 1 o'clock. There are two teams with perfect records in the Scottish Premiership. Neither of them, though, are Rangers. They host Hibs this afternoon and they're underway. Gavin Wallace.
And it's 0-0, Steve, at the moment. 12 minutes on the clock. 8 points behind Aberdeen and Celtic are Rangers, so they really have to win today as they celebrate 125 years here at Ibrox. Four changes from the team that won away at Malmo as Eggman starts, and for Hibs, former Blackburn man Junior Hoylett starts. Nothing doing so far. Rangers 0, Hibs 0.
Five games in the WSL today. Manchester City versus Brighton is the early kickoff at 12:30. Mike Minay.
Yeah, afternoon, Steve. Both of these impressing on the opening weekend. City getting a 2-2 draw at Arsenal. Brighton resounding 4-0 win over Everton. They're unchanged, as you'd imagine. As for the Blues, third game in a week, four changes from the side that secured Champions League group stage qualification on Thursday by beating Paris FC. Miedemar Hemp, Kasper Ajnfagino, all back in Gareth Taylor's 11.
There's also one game in Rugby Union's Premiership today, 3 o'clock kickoff, Leicester Tigers against Bath, so we will look ahead to that properly in the next hour. Nader Manur is with us, Julian Laron is with us, and we've got Andy Reid as well. Afternoon, Andy, all good?
Good afternoon. How are you, mate? Everything okay?
Very good, thank you. Very good. I'm particularly good, I think, because despite the fact that Nader Manur is getting increasingly big time and increasingly...
Oh, no.
Wait, it's a good thing.
No.
And increasingly in demand, you're still with us, having been at Bayern Munich by a Leverkusen.
Well, you know, I'm the Bundesliga specialist, aren't I, as everybody knows. But yeah, that was a really nice experience to get the chance to go there, to watch the game, to talk about it. And also after the game, to be doing interviews with, like, my friend Vincent Kompany, my mate. I'm just chatting to him about what is one of the biggest games in European football. It's really nice. And I appreciate that, but come on, I'm not that big time.
It sounds very good, but I'm also told there is a photograph doing the rounds of you in Lederhosen somewhere.
Listen, as was the case with my career, I'm all about the team. And if they need me in Lederhosen or Nederhosen, whatever you want to say.
Hey,
you see that?
Do you know what?
I don't want to see it, because once you see it, you can't forget it.
That's exactly how I felt. And to be honest, it was because it's Oktoberfest over in Munich. I'm dressed like that and I feel ridiculous, but I blend in with everybody else.
True.
So
that's
a really surreal moment in my life where I couldn't quite figure out who I was or why I was there.
I'm sending that straight to our social
team. Listen, do what you need to do. As long as it brings engagement, that's the main thing.
Disappointingly, Nederhosen was going to be my punchline as well.
Oh, sorry. Must be really obvious then.
I assume you've never been seen in this way, Andy.
Oh, absolutely not. I don't intend on being either.
Absolutely.
I don't think I could pull it off like Naden, to be fair.
Disappointingly, he is pulling it off. 85058 at 5 Live Sport is how you get in touch with us. So we've got Ipswich Town against Aston Villa at 2 o'clock. Loads more to come on that before we get to kick off. We should get the team news around about 12:50. And we'll have a special guest as well. The Ipswich Town CEO, Mark Ashton, is going to join us live on 5 Live Premier League Sunday about 10 past 1. We'll start, though, with Manchester United Tottenham, full commentary at 4:30. So, Andy, two teams, identical records. Win a game like this, you can kick on. Lose, and suddenly, you've had the worst start of the traditional big hitters and you're in the bottom half after six games. So it's a big one, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's funny to think how big these games get so early in the season. It is a big game and there's a lot of pressure. Both of the managers have felt the pinch, I think, so far this season, you know, and it's going to be interesting now to see what way this plays out, who really wants to go for it. I still like the way Tottenham go about their business, though. They still really want to go for it. And Ange comes out and says, even when they went down to 10 men the other night, they still really, really went after it. So I think that's good, and it makes for a good game. I think it should be an interesting game. I think it should be an entertaining one. Hopefully we see a few goals.
But my friend Erik ten Hag is under pressure more than Ange Postecoglou. I'm sorry, this is a home game. Old Trafford on the back of a very disappointing performance in Europe on Thursday night against a team that Manchester United should have easily beaten in 20, that hadn't been in Europe for 10 years, that have decent player but nowhere near the squad that United have, and even less the pedigree. And yet, here we are again. You said in the intro that ten Hag is asking for more time again, which is true, and he's the gift that keeps on giving for me, as you know. But I think he's under massive pressure today, because they play today, they have Porto in midweek, and then they play Aston Villa. If those next three games don't go well for him, I think that his position will be very, very, very difficult to keep.
Do you think Spurs are in a better position right now? Do you think they're a better team?
I think they're a more established team in what their manager wants them to do, that's for sure.
Okay, so for me, as I watch Spurs, because I do like the way they play, I do enjoy watching them on TV or whenever I can in person.
Listening on the radio
specifically on a Sunday, there's nothing better.
There you go.
But I feel like they need to play well to win, whereas United don't have that. I think there have been times when we've critiqued United's performances and they've won games. Like today could be another example of that. So which situation would you rather be in? A team that you know can get better, or a team that almost has to be perfect to win?
I don't know, because Spurs' win against Brentford, for example, last weekend was far from perfect.
Yeah.
They conceded a lot of chances again, and Vicario had to make some good save. They conceded after 22 seconds, and yet they came back and won the game by not being perfect. And I think this Spurs team can't be perfect because of how unbalanced by essence they are, really. For you, I would rather have my team with a clear identity and a clear idea, even if it's not perfect, even if at times you are too open, even if at times you're unbalanced, than a team like United, where you don't really know exactly what you're going to get from them. And I think even the players don't really know exactly what their style is or what they ask to do.
That's my big thing about Man United. My opinion hasn't changed in them for probably about two and a half years. They will... The reason, in my opinion, why they do win games like that, Nadim, is because they've got some really, really good individual players. Mm. every time I watch them, I don't, and they will win games because of that, because they will have match winning moments, they will get good goals, but I don't see the structure, I don't see what they're trying to do, I still don't see how they play. Sometimes they come up and they build quite well, other times they don't really build well, sometimes they hit teams on the counter, sometimes they don't. I don't know what type of team Man United are, still, after all the season. So if you just say, right, what's Erik ten Hag's style at Man United, what's his philosophy? I don't really know. And that's not to say that they can't win games, because they proved that they can, but I don't think it makes for consistently winning games, and I don't think it makes a team that are going to challenge at the top end of the Premier League.
Why don't we hear from him then? So Manchester United have started the weekend and they are still 11th in the Premier League table. Their goal difference is exactly zero. How does Erik ten Hag think the season is going?
It will be just every game, and that's normal. Everyone is, for every game, expecting United is winning. We know that there's not a secret for anyone. And when you are in this club, you have to deal with this factor. And we do. And we have to cope with this. And we have to get, of course, the best out of it. And we have to match the expectations everyone has. But we know also young players, young squad, a new team, that takes some time. And we are going in a good direction, I think, in the last couple of weeks. On many aspects of football, now it's about be more efficient and score more goals, because that will win you games.
Which is exactly right, Jules. It's easy to say and it's harder to do. Look, there's lots of things we could focus on with Manchester United, and obviously we always want to try and have a slightly different conversation.
Yeah.
So we're focusing on their goals. You listen to Ten Hag there. The question is, how do they do it?
Well, by being more clinical to start with, because if you look at the goal, they scored 5 in the league this season, and they expected goals. So the goal that we expected them to score because of the chances that they created and where they had those chances is 9.6 this season. So they're clearly way below in terms of where they should be, clearly underwhelming in terms of efficiency in front of goals. I get that. My issue with this is, and they had Højlund injured, who's just coming back now. So Joshua Zirkzee or a Marcus Rashford or somebody like that, where the guys you wanted to score, or Garnacho or Bruno Fernandes, those kind of guys. For Joshua Zirkzee especially, because he seems to be a little bit the focus point now on why they're not scoring and why is this guy not shooting more, because he doesn't shoot much. I think he's on 2.3 shots per game, which is way below the number nines in the league, the top number nines in the league, like Erling Haaland is 4.5 shots a game. Zirkzee at 2.3, thinking like, okay, there's something.
It's almost like he's not a number nine.
Here we go. So I find a little bit baffling that we're looking at our United misfiring, really, in front of goals, with a guy who plays as a number nine, who's not really a number nine. And from the first day, we've said it on the show all the time, they've recruited a great player who is very versatile, but who is not a number nine in and out striker. He's not a clinical finisher. This is not what he does. I think the misconception around Zirkzee is maybe the fact that he's 6'3" or 1.93 meters. And producer Chris told me that was 6'3", which I still did. I was not sure. He's a tall guy, but he has the feet of a number 10. He has the skill set of a number 10 player who plays behind a striker, because he links up the game so well. He's very smart. He's very elegant. His first touch is great. And he just sees the game like a number 9, like a number 10, sorry, not like a number 9. So I find it a bit baffling that he gets blamed for United not scoring, when really that's never been his job.
What I would say, to slightly go against what you're saying, is we assume that the nine is going to be the one that has most of the shots. But looking at some of the stats, like Eberezi, I think he's had the second most shots in the league this season. So it's not necessarily a case of, you want to be in a world whereby you create so many opportunities for them that they do have a lot of shots. But there are attacking midfielders and forward types who do just shoot on sight as well. I think Semenyo is another example of that. And say Cole Palmer, for example, like he's taking more shots for Chelsea than say anybody else. Well, just behind Nicholas Jackson in terms of taking total shots. But I think for United, it's sort of an element of creativity. I think, as Andy was saying before, the individuals cover up a lot of the cracks in which the team have, because those individuals can have really great moments. But to give a shout out to Statman Dave, unfortunately, I've got to do that. There was a point where he was doing analysis and he was talking about United and the nature of their attacks and sustained attacks, and whether it's a team attack or whether it's an individual doing something. And there was far more last season from individuals than it was collective. And the better teams, it's the collective that lead to tons of opportunities and sustained moments. So Xerxes is going to get a lot of stick if he misses chances. And as you've said, the fact that he's massive, you're thinking, oh, just get it in the box, let him win headers and stuff.
Exactly.
But that's the fault within us, not within him, nor the recruitment that United have done, because they know what type of player he is. But scoring 5 goals through 5 games for a team of that scale who wants to be successful, it's just not going to be good enough.
I've got no problem with Xerxes playing as a nine. I don't think he needs to play as an old school kind of out and out number nine. I think I was watching Liverpool yesterday and what they'd done with Jota, and Jota was almost at times like a nine, but he was dropping in, coming a little bit deeper, and then you had the two wide men making runs in behind, and at times it caused a lot of problems. It's difficult sometimes for the centre backs to know who to mark. So I don't think the actual position for me is necessarily the problem, because I think with tactical flexibility, the teams have now, I think you can work it and you can arrange a structure around it that kind of fits and suits. The problem is being clinical when you get in and when you get them opportunities, and they have to be. I don't think Ten Hag helps himself sometimes. He was looking at probably Rashford. He's been considering how he was last season. He hit a little bit of a purple patch, I suppose, and he looked really sharp. He looked like he was scoring again, and then he didn't play the other night. And I'm a little bit like, just get him in the team, just get him out on the pitch, just keep going with him, you know. So I think there's a little degree of you know, I think Ten Hag needs to kind of strike while the iron's hot with these players in terms of his team selection.
I think that is, Jules, the counterpoint, that you've got Hoyland, who, you know, if selected, he's available. It would be his first Premier League start of the entire season because of injury. Potentially, that allows Xerxes to be slightly deeper. Might not, because then is Bruno Fernandes in the team. Rashford, as Andy was saying, looks more confident. So, yes, this is the situation they are in now, and we could go through the stats, and you know, Erling Haaland has scored double the number of Premier League goals than Manchester United have in this season so far, which is still a young season. So there are outs, if you like.
Yeah.
But the question is whether they should really need them when this was clear that they needed to sign a goal scorer in the summer.
Yeah, or your goal scorer is Hoyland, but so far we've had Hoyland 6 good months at Atalanta, then this big move.
And you need more than one if you...
Yeah, I guess so. But then, in a way, I understood the Xerxes signing, because you've got Hoyland as a pure nine, to go back to what we were saying, a real in and out striker, a bit old school, in just as a finisher. And then why signing another goal scorer when you have one already that you have to trust, that you spent 70 million on a year before? So then you go and get Xerxes, who is a very different profile. For me, they could work even well together, but then where do you put Bruno? So fair enough. I would be very, very curious to see Xerxes and Holden actually playing together with two wild players and see how that goes, even if that means Bruno a bit deeper. But it's almost the perfect, they've got the two perfect number nines then in their squad, because you have two that are just complementing each other so well, different. So depending on who you face, you can play one or the other. Depending on what the game offers, you can bring on one with the other or replacing one with the other. I think this is perfect. But the problem is, again, and we go back to Ten Hag, I'm sorry, I don't want to like feel like I'm insisting on him, but if there's no structure other Hoyland around Hoyland or Xerxes or Cantona or George Best or whoever you want, it's never going to work for no one, really, unless individually sometimes somebody do something like they did last season. But that gets you to 8th in the Premier League, your worst ever Premier League season.
I think that's true. It's all fair, and you talk about this in a passionate way because they should be doing better. And I think some of the players that you mentioned there, whether it's Xerxes, whether it's Hoyland, like, it feels as if he has more options now, but doesn't quite know how to use them yet.
Completely.
Because some of the signings that have come in, from what I hear, United fans are happy with an Ugarte, they're happy with a Mazraoui, they're happy with a De Ligt, they're happy with these players. But all of a sudden, Ugarte's not playing because they're going for Eriksen now alongside Aminu. Like, where does Fernandes fit in? And they've not been able to find that right blend at this time. Yes, they do have wingers, but as you said, if it's going to be Xerxes and Hoyland playing together, who misses out? Does Fernandes, like, drift out wide? Well, what does this mean for some of their wingers? And it's very United, isn't it? Unfortunately for them, I thought this season they would have improved, given the fact that they finished last season as well as they did, lifting a trophy. They've brought the signings in now, and you're seeing the ownership seem like they're having more of an influence. But 5 games in, they've won some games and not looked good. They've lost some games and looked bad. And that game in midweek, as you mentioned, against 20 was. I didn't see that coming. At home, Manchester United playing in Europe, whether it's the Champions League, Europa League, Conference League, or just any game, that should be a dominant thing for them. And it didn't look that way, even though they had the chances to potentially win it. It shouldn't be that close, in my opinion, given the scale of that team and the quality of players that they have.
I think Man United, with the personnel that they've got, are really set up to be a really good counter-attacking team. I think they've got the pace. If you look at Garnacho, you look at Rashford, you look at Xerxes kind of getting on the ball and turning and slipping people in, how quickly they can break the lines with passes. But I think it's a really difficult strategy to go down for Man United, because, you know, they want to dominate possession. The fans demand that. But for me, it probably goes back to recruitment. They've made some good signings. But what are the signings for? If you're bringing in new players, what type of style are you bringing these players into play? It's just a mixed bag of players thrown together, hoping that they'll do something good. You have to be signing players to be playing in a certain way, to be buying into a philosophy. You're buying players for certain positions to do certain roles, and that just hasn't really been the case. Well, again, I completely agree that they've signed good players. I'm still confused as to why they're signing these players. What's the job?
Let's take you back to Bristol, shall we, where England are motoring along against Australia. Nick Eshragani.
They are indeed, yeah, on the verge of bringing up their 150. In fact, they do, with that single to Harry Brook a few moments ago as well. Ben Duckett brought up his half century. He's currently 59. In fact, make that 60 from 50 balls. Harry Brook, 43 from 36. England, 150 for two in the 20th over. The spinners in particular taking a lot of tap. Harry Brook hitting Adam Zampa for three consecutive sixes in the same over off the bowling of Zampa, and then Cooper Connolly, who replaced him, slow left armer, making his ODI debut, went and got dispatched for a couple of boundaries off the bat of Ben Duckett. So England motoring along, as you say, 151 for two now in the 20th over.
I do not believe in jinxing player performances, so I'm just going to say both Brook and Duckett are playing absolutely phenomenally at the minute. Commentary on Five Sports Extra. Let's check in the Scottish Premiership. Rangers Hibs, Gavin Wallace.
0-0 at the moment. Nobody is motoring along here, if I'm being honest, Steve. Rangers had the best chance. Shefty on 22 burst into the box. It was great, actually. He played it towards Vlachos Cherny, and he totally fluffed his lines and dragged it well beyond the goalkeeper's post on that far left-hand side. Nothing else doing. Rangers 0, Hibs 0.
Thank you, Gavin. Loads more to come on Ipswich against Aston Villa, which is the 2 o'clock kickoff in the Premier League. Our first commentary. Should get the team news in around about 20 minutes' time, and then the CEO of Ipswich Town, Mark Ashton, is going to join us live on 5 Live about 10 past one. We've talked Manchester United. Let's move on to Tottenham Hotspur, who did sign that goal scorer in the summer, Dominic Solanke, joining from Bournemouth for £65 million. Two in two, he scored, Jules. Obviously started the season with an ankle injury. Do you think we're starting to see the real Dominic Solanke?
Yeah, I think so. And I think, I don't know when the boys change clubs. I don't think even it matters in terms of what position you're playing. Of course, for a striker, you want to score your first goal for your new club as quickly as possible, because especially after a big move, then it takes a lot of the pressure off you, and people, I guess, see you differently, even your own fans. So for Solanke, after a slow start and that game against Arsenal where he's got that chance in the first half when they recovered the ball quite high, and clearly you could see that he's a bit low on confidence because he should strike the ball straight away, and instead take a touch, try to come inside, Saliba comes out, etc. So you could see, so those two goals in the last two games will mean a lot to him as well. But it's like changing clubs. If you're a defender, if you're a midfielder, you want to hit the ground running straight away. You want to be good. You want the fans to be happy with you. You want the manager to be happy with you, and you want to feel good. And until you play well, you don't feel good. So I'm glad that he finally found the back of the net. His first goal against Brentford was a tap-in. It was probably the easiest goal that he would ever score in his career. But it was not so much the way he scored it, but how important it was for him to just finally just, this is the first goal. Now I can almost move on from the transfer.
How quickly did you settle at Spurs, Andy, when you went there?
Well, I was moving from the Championship to the Premier League, and that was a big jump up. So that was the bit that you're kind of getting used to. Maybe not necessarily the club, but you know you're getting used to the difference in the league. So that was a big jump for me. So he doesn't have to deal with that. But where he's going into a fantastic club, the infrastructure and everything behind it, the training ground, the stadium, the fans, it's all geared to being really, really successful. I think he's Spurs never really replaced Harry Kane, and they've been waiting, and then they got, and well, I don't see him as a direct replacement in terms of like for like. He is that kind of focal point now that they probably lacked last season. So there's a little bit of adjustment that needs to kind of go on tactically. Players getting used to him, players getting used to, you know, Son played a lot there last season and his runs in behind are good, but he's not a real focal point. And Solanke is He's really good with his back to goal, holds up the play really well, which means that he can get runners past, his sets are good, and he knows where the goal is, so he knows where to be when people are in wide areas. I look at his movement in the box, he moves really well in the box, his movement across the front post is really good, and probably it's gone out of the game a little bit, in my opinion. He's a really good header of the ball. So I think he's got all the makings of being really, really successful for Tottenham with the style that he plays and the type of player that they've got.
I think the point you were making, Crossy, about...
I don't make points, will you?
Well, the one that someone told you to say about styles of play and so on. It feels weird, but like Bournemouth and Spurs are probably quite similar. I think the role that he played for Bournemouth as a lone striker with a 10 behind him, whoever that may be, the sort of speed in which they attack, the way they spread the field and so on, I think it's probably helped him. Obviously, the scale of Spurs compared to Bournemouth can be very different. But again, it's easy to forget that Solanke, he's not a young player. Mm. You know, he feels it still to me and maybe to others, but he's not this. He's been at Chelsea.
Yeah.
He's been on loan several times. He's been at Liverpool.
Yeah.
And he was at Bournemouth for a few years as well. So it's good to see that he's off the mark. You know, he scored his goal. The crowd can get into him because there were certain parts of his play which I was believing in terms of the way he sort of initiates the press. He likes to play with the high intensity that Spurs do play in right now. So once he's got the goals going for him, that's going to be a big boost for him for sure.
His work rate's incredible. He works really, really hard. And no matter who the footballer is, no matter how much ability you've got, how little you've got, if you're starting from a base of your work rate is really, really top notch, you're giving yourself a chance.
Mm. Do you think, because Ange Postecoglou said this is what he's seeing at the minute, Jules, can you see a relationship developing between Solanke and Brennan Johnson at the moment?
Not really, no. I didn't see it against Arsenal when I was at the ground. I didn't see it against Brentford either. I mean, no, you see it, but I don't see a particular link between Solanke and Johnson. I think Solanke and Son and Solanke and Maddison as well. Same with Maddison and Johnson, Maddison and Son. I think would be key anyway. For me, Maddison is the key in everything that Spurs do with the ball anyway. But I think for Solanke, he must have waited for this opportunity for a long time now. He was almost a prodigy when he was a kid. He was the best in his generation. He was outstanding in youth level. There was so much hype around him when he was like a teenager, really, that Chelsea didn't work out for whatever reason. Liverpool didn't work out either. He had to go to Bournemouth, even in the Championship, doing well. And finally now, and like Nedim said, he's not that young anymore, to get his chance as a starter in one of the big Premier League clubs. And that's pressure too. Mm. So I think he can, I agree with the boys, I think he's an outstanding talent and he will get there. But it's interesting to see how many years it took him to get there. Because for others, it's much quicker. And for someone like him, it took some highs and lows and more lows than highs before getting there.
Goal at Ibrox, Gavin Wallace.
Eventually, after a massive long VAR check, at least a minute or so, Tom Lawrence, it was a thing of beauty. Down this left-hand side, he cuts in onto his right foot just at the edge of the box and unleashes this delicious wrapped-around foot round it, and it kind of goes in off the... I can't really do it any justice. You need to see it. It goes in off the top of the post as well, just below the crossbar. Fantastic. Rangers 1, Hibs 0.
Another 50 for Harry Brook. Nikesh.
Yeah, 52 from just 41. 2 fours, 5 sixes in that as well. England going along really nicely now after the loss of those 2 wickets. Just pegged them back a touch. They're cruising at 166 for 2 in the 22nd over.
And there's live commentary now on Five Sports Extra. I mentioned Brennan Johnson just now. You might have seen this story. He deactivated his Instagram account because he got an awful amount of abuse on social media after the North London derby. Since then, he scored 3 goals in 3 games, and Ange Postecoglou says his hard work is paying off.
If it's made Brennan happier or, you know, sort of more comfortable, then that's great for him. But that's not the reason, I don't think. I think the reason is that he just works awfully hard at his game. And if you work awfully hard at something and you're really passionate about it, you know, eventually, you know, you get the rewards. You know, the thing is not to let it sort of affect your work ethic and your focus. And it hasn't, you know. Like I said, Brennan is in every day wanting to be better. He asks for feedback. He continually working on his game. He really cares about the club. He cares about his teammates. He wants to be the best he can be. And I think when you have that attitude, eventually the rewards come. And, you know, he's at the moment he's getting the rewards. But I still think there's more to come. I think there's a lot more to come. And I say that because I know you know, even now he's looking to improve, looking to get better, and that's what you want to see in young players.
The Tottenham manager, Ange Postecoglou, got Nader Manua, Julian Laron and Andy Reid all with us on Premier League Sunday. Andy, this is right in your wheelhouse for two reasons. One, you've spent so much time working with young players and you'll know about the dangers of social media, but also you've worked with Brennan Johnson for a long time as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm listening to Ange there, and all them things are just ringing through in my head. That's exactly the description of Brennan. He's such a down to earth lad. He's actually quite quiet at times, quite unassuming, quite shy. But he wants to get better. He loves football. He loves playing football. He loves training every day. He loves scoring goals. He works hard at his game. He wants to improve. All them bits that Ange just said there, he wants feedback. You know, we spent a lot of time over the last, well, just before he left, for 18 months before, going through so many video bits with Brennan, and he'd come to you and he'd be like, really, what do you think of this? And, you know, we'd be walking away through the clips, and, you know, he just wants to be the best that he can possibly be. I've got absolutely zero doubts in my mind that Brennan is good enough to be a Premier League player. I think he's improving all the time. I think what we have seen over the last three games is his mental strength as well, to be able to bounce back from what was a tough enough situation. You know, I know the Tottenham fans can be quite demanding at times, and rightly so. If you play at a big club, then them demands come with it, and you have to perform. And what he's done, deactivated the social media account for me, not really that much of a big deal, because you do your talking on the pitch anyway, and that's what he's done. He's done his talking on the pitch. He's a threat. I actually agree. I disagree with Jules there about. I watched the game in Europe during the week, and I felt that him and Dominic Solanke linked up really, really well. And I could just see kind of shoots at understandings. And I think Brennan works really well with other players because he's clever with his game. And I think back to the link to him and Morgan Gibbs-White had, and the link to him and Tau Awoniyi had as well when he was at Forest. And I kind of see some similarities there. When somebody comes off short and there's space in behind, that's when Brennan comes alive. That's when he's at his best, and he's absolute dynamite.
I think, like you say, Andy, that, you know, the disabling of the Instagram account is not really the significant thing. The significant thing is the awful abuse that he's had to deal with. And I imagine you see that a lot with young players. And I imagine it's something that you proactively try and get ahead of that with young players and let them know, sadly, what might be coming.
Yeah, absolutely. The young players now, and I know they earn loads of money, and not all of them, but a lot of them, they earn money, and that's always a stick that people beat them. Oh, well, it's all right to give them abuse because they earn loads of money. No, it's not. You know, it's okay to have criticism because we're in that industry, we're in that spotlight. So you can't argue about the criticism, but it should not border onto abuse. Young players now have to deal with so many different things that are difficult than what we had to deal with when we were coming through. When I was kind of playing, when I just started, you go on the pitch, you go to an away ground, you get abused during the game, but that was all kind of part of it. But then when it was over, and you get back on the training ground. It's not like that for the players, you know, and human nature as well. When you're going through the social media posts, you can see 100 good ones and you see one bad one, and for some reason your brain just focuses on that bad one. And you know, I was so fortunate, and I see myself as being fortunate, that when I was playing, I was never on social media. So you know, towards the end, when it started to kind of bubble up a little bit, I stayed away from it, and I was pleased that I did. But it's on the flip side of it, the players then will say, well, it's also part of building the brand, and you know, and building all these other bits that they've got surrounding it, but you can't have it both ways. So for me, I think it was probably a wise decision from Brennan. Just concentrate on your football and just crack on. It shouldn't be like that, by the way, but unfortunately it is.
I think yourself and myself are probably going to reveal our age a bit in the fact that, you know, when we were younger, social media wasn't a thing. You know, whereas I think for people like Brennan, I think with social media, it is a gift and a curse, because the accessibility is the gift, but the accessibility can also be a curse, because now, say, your biggest fan could be on the other side of planet Earth and they can reach you through social media. But in the same breath, some people who at times have no regard for you as a person at all can also access you. And I do wonder sometimes, say with Brennan, the abuse that he got after the North London derby, which I didn't see, I don't know what's been said and so on. But, like, are your own fans abusing you from that standpoint? Because what does that mean for the next time you're going to play? Does that help you at all? Well, the answer is it's probably not. But for him to think that the best course of action is to be able to deactivate his account, credit to him for being able to do that. Because what I would say is, in the same way that myself, Andy, and everyone in this room didn't have social media when we were younger, like, a young person today has it. And it's not just about, say, for the brand. It's just, this is what young people do. They're used to it. Yeah, they're very much online, whether they're playing football or they're not. They could have 2 followers, could have 2 million followers, but it's the younger mentality. So for him to think that he's now got to act in a different way is a shame. But as Ange was saying, like, his football's doing the talking. As Andy's saying, he's talking about the traits he has as a person, as a player, somebody that's striving to be better. And that's, if that's the way that he's got to do it, by deactivating it, then more power to him, because the results are certainly there.
Some of the bits that get me a little bit, when I think about Brendan's family, and obviously played with his dad and know his dad, and to be honest with you, for Jono, it's for David, that is, it's kind of water off a duck's back. He can kind of deal with it because he understands it. But, you know, think about his mum. His mum's a lovely woman, and, you know, all his family, and they have to kind of put up with that as well. And them things are difficult, and they're not always taken into account. You know, I was always, you know, as a player, I always thought, you can say what you want to me, and it never really bothered me. I got called all names under the sun, you know, especially being a corner taker as well. You go off and take corner, you know, some of the away games. I remember going to Millwall one time, and, you know, and it's tough taking a corner there. You know, but, you know, for me, it's all right. But then you think, well, the effect it has on the family as well, it's not nice. And unfortunately, it's a bit that creeps into the game, and when all you want to do is concentrate on football.
I did like as well, Jules, reading James Maddison talking about Brennan Johnson, and he basically said, you know, when he's scoring goals now, James basically said he's trying to get the fans up and almost like encourage them to get behind him, because players know, especially younger players, what each other have gone through. Because James Maddison's obviously a bit older than Brennan Johnson, but he is from a generation who experienced it. So you can kind of see that sense of togetherness as well.
Yeah, and I'm sure that when Brennan decided to deactivate his account, I'm sure there was people in the dressing room that he went to and discussed it maybe with, and saying, like, you know, what should I do? Same with his family, same with people close to him. I think he shows great maturity. And I hate the fact that he felt he had to do that, because he must have been really horrendous. But I think he showed great maturity too, to be able to say, you know what, I don't care about social media. I think a lot of other players would keep it and really struggle with it. He said, I don't want this in my life. I'm better than this. This is not what I'm here for. I'm not here to be abused by my own fans after a game where I maybe didn't perform as well as I could have or should have. And then go on. And after that, scoring 3 goals in 3 games, I'm like, okay, a lot of respect for that.
That's the bit that I think shows the maturity. You know, you can turn off your social media. Yeah, it's a big deal for some people. For some, it's not. But going out on the football pitch and answering by what you do. I mean, I'd rather talk about Brennan's attributes. I mean, he's got blistering pace. Technically, he's a lovely footballer. He's one of the best finishers that I've ever seen. He's got brilliant finishes. You know, all types of finishes. He can finish low. He can finish high into the net. If the keeper's coming out, he can dink it. He gets across the near post. He moves in behind. He can go 1v1. All these fantastic attributes, I think we will see flourish as time goes by at Tottenham. I think it's a perfect club for him. I think he's probably gone through a sticky patch. He will win them fans over, and I think they will absolutely love him. We'll be looking back on this and probably kind of laughing at how it was at the start. I think in, you know, 3-4 years, the fans, I think, will absolutely love him.
Spurs at Manchester United in our 4:30 commentary. We'll get the team news shortly from Portman Road. Ipswich Town versus Aston Villa is our first commentary at 2 o'clock. Let's take you back to Bristol. England still motoring, Nick Ash.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, this partnership now between Ben Duckett and Harry Brook, worth 132 from just 96 balls. Adam Zampa is currently into his third over of this innings. He's one of the best white ball bowlers in world cricket. Harry Brook treating him like a club cricketer on a Sunday afternoon. But just as I say that, he has picked up the wicket of Harry Brook. Talk about that for timing. So Zampa eventually has the final laugh, but he's gone for 44 midway through his third over. He has just had Harry Brook caught out at long off, perhaps trying one shot too many, but a fabulous innings from Harry Brook comes to an end. 72 from just 52. Ben Duckett is still there at the other end on 84 from 67, and England 202 for 3 now in the 25th over.
Okay, so I just need to make a point of order here. Jeff Lemon is alongside Nick Ash. Hi Jeff, good afternoon.
Hello.
The last time I was with you at cricket, you told me it's really lazy as a broadcaster to say that you can jinx a player, and yet something like that happens.
Yeah, that's called a coincidence.
Oh, is it now?
Coincidences happen all the time.
Okay.
Think about how many people are in this ground today, and think about all the different conversations they were all having. Any one of them could have said anything in the world, and a couple of them will have had something relevant happen just after that.
Yeah, and one of them was Nick Ashton when he was live on the radio.
It was.
World Cup winner Ebony Rainford-Brent is with us as well. Hey,
hello,
Ebony.
Hello, good to join you.
Well, we still need to talk about the brilliance of Harry Brook, despite that wicket, because that's three successive incredibly important innings.
Yeah, really good. Obviously, he got his maiden century the other day in ODI cricket, but I think it was more important actually this run of form for me is because he got a little bit of the press poked at him a little bit for saying some comments about the team in terms of maybe not caring about how they got out. They were just trying to play this aggressive brand, and he had to deal with this sort of media fire. And for some players that might have made their form dip, and actually for him he's gone the other way and put in three big performances that really shows his character. He's free-flowing in mind, he's playing free-flowing, and he's not letting that outside pressure as a captain get in. So I think really important for him, and also why I think he really went hard today as well is because there might be some weathering later, and it's important that England keep that score rate high. So he's batted beautifully, but I think more importantly his character as a captain has really shone through.
I think that's a really important point, Jeff, as well, because it's not just as captain where he's had those question marks. I think when you go back to the Ashes, when, you know, there was lots of talk about England getting out easily, and he's the guy with the Major League Baseball sticker on his bat. You know, he's had it before.
And he's the player who got out playing a baseball sort of shot during the Lord's Test when England collapsed, and there was all of that criticism of the style they play. We saw it in the first ODI when they were in a similar dominant position like this and then collapsed to not set Australia a big enough score. So they still have to finish off the second half of the innings here. But yeah, it's one of those things. Brook has been in this dressing room basically under Ben Stokes and Brendan McCullum. That's been his international career. It's also upbeat. It's also positive that I think it's easy as a younger player to come out, try to parrot some of the things that you've heard in that dressing room and not express them quite well enough with enough nuance because you don't have the experience to know how comments will be interpreted. So, you know, he's not a professional wordsmith or public speaker. He's a professional hitter of a cricket ball. So I don't think we can expect him to phrase everything perfectly when he's asked a question.
We'll come back to the three of you very, very shortly, but we've had a penalty at Ibrox, Gavin.
We have indeed, and Jack Butland has got Rangers out of a big hole. John Souter was the man guilty of the handball just a yard or so off the line. Mykola Kukarevic, Steve, it was a really poor penalty. It's one of those stutter runs up, really slow, easy for Jack Butland to get down to his right-hand side, and it looked all too easy for the Englishman. It's still Rangers 1, Hibs 0.
Nikesh, just take the batting out of Harry Brook for just 1 second. What have you made of his actual captaincy beyond that?
Well, look, I think it's early days, of course. As Jeff mentioned, he's been around the likes of Josh Butler and Ben Stokes for his entire international career. Not, you know, the worst captains in the world to be learning off. They've obviously got a very set style in which they play, and he's kind of carried that on. He doesn't particularly sort of, you know, have the aura of somebody like a Ben Stokes, but neither does Josh Butler. And he's been pretty successful at times with this white ball side, picking on from what Owen Morgan has done. So, look, early days, I think he's got the respect of all his teammates, which is key. He's an absolutely gun batter, as we've mentioned. He's churning out the runs here. He's leading from the front. And I think as a new captain, that's the best thing you can do. As long as you're performing well, you can take the rest of the team with you. And he certainly did that today. Very entertaining knock, and it looks as though England are on for an absolutely massive score here.
We've talked, Jeff, about how well England have done to get themselves back from 2-0 behind to come into the decider with a chance of winning the series. What aspects of Australia's play, though, will they be most disappointed with?
Well, I think just an inability to create pressure with the ball. You know, we saw them put together a good score up at it was Durham, wasn't it, where Alex Carey rescued the innings and got them past 300, and they should have been competitive there, but really weren't. You know, Brook was able to take them down there, and then they were absolutely smashed at Lord's, 39 over game to concede more than 300, choosing to bowl first and then getting battered around the place again here. And, you know, Mitchell Starc has been largely ineffective, got smashed at Lord's, got smashed to begin with here. Josh Hazlewood's been good, but hasn't had enough support. So, you know, they haven't been bad in the field. They've taken the chances that have come their way, but the bowling's just been taken down by England, and I think that'll be the real concern for Australia is how they restrict teams who will go aggressively at them.
And it is going to be interesting, Ebony, obviously, to see how England get on with the ball. They've had to manage Jofra Archer to the extent where we get to the decider and sadly we don't get to see him.
Yeah, look, I think you can see the new generation being built. You know, the key was getting Jofra Archer back. But then also, if you look at the other bowlers around, Matthew Potts and Ollie Stone, they've got pace and they've got some real movement in terms of what the bowlers can offer. So this new kind of generation, Bryden Carse is another one. I think they're really pleased at how they pretty much blew Australia away, both pace, movement, and so that ability to have Jofra in the team and also be rested and still have a number of bowlers you can talk to that can offer a lot with the ball is important to England. So that I feel like England are really shaping up nicely now. They've got the aggressive batting, which we knew. Now they've got their pace bowlers really firing. They've still got the spin of Adil Rashid and bringing in new bowlers like Bethell. So it's coming together. It feels like this could be the rebuild. There was a bit of a fall off recently under Jos Buttler, and you know how India went in the World Cup last year and England crashing out pretty early. Now I feel this is a team that is rebuilding, looks focused, got the bowlers, got the batters, and looks very, very sharp.
And just to wrap up, Nikesh, as Jeff will attest to, there's absolutely no problem with me saying Ben Duckett's closing in on 100.
Yes, he is. He's 10 away from a potential second ODI 100. He's 90 from 72. Jamie Smith has just come out to join him at the other end as well. He's unbeaten on 2. Zampa trying to pull back his figures as well. He's been brought up for a half century. 1 for 50, his figures, midway through his fourth over. But England's still in a very dominant position here. Still Liam Livingstone to come as well. They're 210 for 3 in the 27th.
Lovely stuff. Thank you very much, guys. Always a pleasure. Ebony Rinford, Brent there, Jeff Lemon and Nikesh Raghani, who will continue to keep us up to date, or you can listen to the commentary right now on Five Sports Extra. Let's take you back into the WSL, shall we? Manchester City versus Brighton was the 12:30 kickoff. Mike Miner.
Yeah, 25 minutes played, 0-0, a little bit of early Brighton pressings now turned largely into Manchester City control, building on the edge of the Brighton box. Just had a couple of big chances for Bunny Shaw. One she sliced, the second one she bent into the far corner, but with not enough curl on it. So it is Manchester City 0, Brighton 0.
Right, our first commentary on Premier League Sunday comes from Portman Road, Ipswich Town versus Aston Villa in just over an hour's time. Ipswich looking for their first win. Villa can go level on points with Liverpool at the top. Ali Bruce Ball has the team news. Good afternoon.
I do indeed, Steve. Just taking my top two lines there. I'll tell you as Sorry. Well, though, that Portman is quite all right. Portman Road looks a picture. As you say, Aston Villa with a win here could go level with leaders Liverpool on 15 points, but as well a huge night, a huge game on the way on Wednesday night for them at home to Bayern Munich in the Champions League. Saying that, Unai Emery, as expected, goes with the tried and trusted for this one, apart from John McGinn, who's unavailable to him with a hamstring injury. So Leon Bailey comes into the side. That is the one change from the last Premier League outing against Wolves last weekend, where they came back from 1-0 down to win 3-1. What that means, of course, is John Duran remains in the role as super sub, having scored again from the penalty spot, this time against Wickham in the League Cup on Tuesday. As for Ipswich, because of yesterday's results, they've dropped into the bottom three. Kieran McKenna makes three changes for this one from the 1-1 draw against Southampton last weekend, where they rescued themselves with a late Sam Morsey deflected strike. Calvin Phillips is back from his thigh injury. He missed that game, so he returns to the midfield to partner Morsey. He comes in for Jens Kajust. And the other changes for Ipswich in the wide positions today, and they've got lots of options here. So today, Kieran McKenna is going for Chidozie Obenne, who they signed from Luton in the summer, and Jack Clark comes in as well. They come in for Wes Burns and Sammy Smodix. Jack Clark, of course, joined from Sunderland. First league start for Ipswich for him. Scored 15 goals for Sunderland last season. I think we've got an entertaining game on the way, Steve.
So we've got Nader Manua, Andy Reid, Julian Laron all with us alongside Ali for commentary at Portman Road. Is Mark Schwarzer. Good afternoon, Mark.
Good afternoon.
Well, let's start with the obvious news, I suppose. John McGinn, massive blow that.
It is, yeah. I mean, obviously, he's been a really good player for Aston Villa over the last couple of seasons. He's creative. He's got great delivery in the box and also can obviously strike a couple of good balls as well every now and then. No, big, big loss for him today.
The really interesting thing, Andy, about Villa today, I suppose, is going to be, bear in mind, they've got Bayern Munich on Wednesday night. We've got full commentary of that, by the way, on 5 Live. It's the first real example of glamour Champions League tie on the horizon. Can't let it affect you in the Premier League.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's definitely a thing as well, because I remember playing against teams in the Champions League and thinking you would prefer to get them You know, you would definitely prefer to have them after the Champions League game. So it's going to be interesting to see how they do. We've seen how Newcastle struggled last year in the Champions League. You know, I know they picked up a lot of injuries, but it's difficult to get yourself back up. And this is an important game for them today, it really is. So missing John McGinn, big miss. It'd be interesting to see how they turn out. I think Ipswich have a chance of getting a result today.
We'll come back to this in a second because there's been a wicket in the cricket. Nick Ash.
Yes, and it's Jamie Smith, the man out. Clean bowled by Glenn Maxwell. It just basically missed a straight one. Maxwell bowling from around the wicket, getting one to turn just a little bit back into the right-handed Smith, but he'll be disappointed with that shot. Ben Duckett's still there on 91. Liam Livingstone has just come out to join him. England now 215 for 4 in the 28th over.
And the half-time whistle's gone at Ibrox. It is Rangers 1, Hibs 0 at the break. Mark Schwartz, you've been there in Middlesbrough and Fulham, teams who had massive European ties. You got to two European finals with them. That probably to them is similar to the size of Aston Villa being in the Champions League. So it is difficult, isn't it, to balance?
It is, and that is the, you know, the challenge for any team. But we saw that with Newcastle last season, balancing the trips away in Europe, the emotional highs, the euphoria of playing at the elite level of European competition, and then coming not back down to earth, but almost down to the bread and butter of here we go again. It's relentless, and teams do look to really go for you off the back of Champions League fixtures. They see you as a major scalp, as will Ipswich today see as a massive opportunity to pick up points, looking with Villa playing Bayern Munich midweek, looking like they may, you think, as a player, you're thinking they might have their eye on that a little bit. They may be, some players, a little bit like keeping a bit in reserve, worried about maybe getting injured, because that is the tile that everyone will want to play in.
I've got to say, I'm guilty of this as well, because we're talking about Villa playing in the Champions League, but we forget that Villa also played in the Europa League last year. And off the back of being in Europa League, they had their best season in Premier League history to qualify for the Champions League. Mm-hmm. So that element of balance with Unai Emery, they kind of did it well last year.
But don't you think it's the occasion more than the two games in 4 days? They've done that all their career, this player. It's more the fact that this time you play Bayern and then Manchester United 4 days later.
Yeah, that can play into it, but you could make a case that is basically how the back end of last season was for them when they were in the knockout rounds of the European competition.
True.
Because for Bayern Munich, to play Bayern Munich...
They're on a similar size to Bayern, though.
Well, let's put it this way. A game against Bayern Munich in the second group game is going to be very different to playing against Bayern if it was in the knockout rounds in April time.
Yeah, but even in the knockout round last season, they played Lille, for example. You know, they never played the Bayern, or they would have Juventus in November and then Chelsea 4 days later, Stamford Bridge.
They were in the Conference League last year, isn't
Yeah, in the Conference League. So they went far, which was great, and then Olympiakos was the team beat them in semi-final. It's not Juve or Bayern.
Yeah, of course it's not Juve or Bayern, but I'm more so talking about the timing of it. And I think in regards to last year as well, there was a point where something really significant happened, and we think we sort of glossed over it last season. So Arsenal were playing Bayern Munich in the midweek in the knockout rounds, and they had Villa at home on the Sunday.
Yeah.
And some people saying, oh, Arsenal might struggle because, you know, they're playing in Europe and this, that and the other. But Villa were playing on the Thursday, and then Villa travelled to Arsenal and beat Arsenal in that game. Those were two massive games for Villa, and I think it ended up that perhaps they won both games. So the scheduling side of things, I think they're capable of dealing with it. Yes, you could be looking ahead to this game, but it's so early in the season that I don't think it's going to be a case that the manager is going to allow them to be thinking about playing Bayern Munich, because even this Bayern Munich game, whether they win, draw or lose, does it really affect, given the fact that two extra games as it stands, does it affect whether they're going to be in the knockout rounds in the next stage?